I live just outside Melbourne in southwest Queensland, and these days I call myself a freelance storyteller. I guess, like a lot of wannabe writers, I've always wanted to write, and I always have written things. I'm much more comfortable writing than talking, contrary to how it might seem at times. And I think I've always enjoyed storytelling. I remember when I was at school, I did a French essay once and got a comment back from the teacher that said, "This is a wonderful story. Pity you didn't interpret the question correctly." I guess I've got a pretty good imagination. However, like a lot of wannabe writers, I was unpublished. About 3 years ago, early in 2006, I decided to bite the bullet and see if I could get published. And so I've been freelancing since then, and a little bit for Country Life, and more recently I've written a book.
Now, the book itself, tell us a bit about that.
Well, the book is called Caging Octopuses, and it actually evolved as a result of a story I did for Outback about the Condamine Cods Rugby Club. I had a phone call from a friend of mine who I had actually known through ICPA, Megan McNichol. She mentioned that her husband, Lee, had been diagnosed earlier that year. This was in 2007, at the end of 2007, earlier in that year, with depression, and how he believed that the Condamine Cods Rugby Club, of which he's a member, actually did a lot, contributed quite a bit to his recovery. Anyway, I got curious. I'd never heard of the Cods, and I grew up in that district, in actual fact, a little closer to Miles, but I had had memories of Condamine as a child, and I remember it as a tiny little town, and I was really curious about the idea that it would have this rugby team. So ultimately, I actually wrote a story about the Condamine Cods rugby and Lee's depression, and in the course of writing that story, they said to me, "Oh, we've got no records, and would you like to write our history?" They were coming up to their 10 years in 2008.
So where did you start?
Well, I guess I started with, in terms of the book, I started with where they started. You know, how did it begin? They were watching a Super 12 game on TV, and with each sensational try that the Queensland Reds made, Lee was yelling at Bluey across the bar, "We can do that, we can do that." And anyway, the long and short of that was they decided to start a rugby club. They'd been a little concerned about all the young fellas who were, you know, gathering in the pub on weekends and drinking, because there wasn't much else to do. There was a little bit of sport around, but not a lot. And so they started a rugby club. And nobody, I think, ever imagined it would last more than 5 minutes. And they just played for fun. And when they said to me, "We've got no records," I actually thought they were joking, but the truth was they really had no records. But they've now got four rugby teams. There's still only 90 people in the town. It's still a small farming community, etc., but they have four rugby teams and some sensational stories along the way.
And this is what the subject of your book is about.
It is, basically, but it's not as simple as just rugby, because while that's what they do, the story itself is much more complex than that. It's actually about a lot more than rugby, and I didn't ever want to write just a dry old history, because I thought nobody else would be interested in it other than the Condamine Cods and the rugby players. So I decided to turn it into a bit of a story. So I introduced a couple of fictional characters who are loosely based on a whole lot of people in that community, named Meg and Boots. And the story is set in the 2008 season, and Meg discovers early in the piece that she's going to have a baby. So she decides her impending son is nicknamed Baby Boots, and she decides that she'd like to record the stories of the club for Baby Boots when he grows up, and, you know, the founders are all that all gone or whatever, and nobody can remember how it started. And that's how I decided in the end to write the book. It took a lot of research, obviously, because they had no records. But it's been the most interesting and entertaining experience. And out of it, there are a number of things that I think will resonate with a whole lot of people. One is that this community, the last couple of decades, a lot of people in rural and remote areas have felt a little disenfranchised, and, you know, things have been tough, commodity prices have been up and down, there's been more drought than not. This community has actually refocused and reconnected through rugby. So they've kind of rebuilt themselves, not rebuilt themselves, that's not quite the right word, but, you know, it's a vibrant, well-connected community. So it's a lovely story from that perspective. It's also their men's shed in a lot of ways, because all of these blokes, and they don't care who comes. Anybody who wants to play rugby can come, and anybody who's interested in being a part of the whole phenomenon can join, just to come along and watch, whatever. And they have an A, B and a C grade team, but they also have the Golden Oldies team, who are called the Codgers. And I think they probably love training more even than they enjoy the game, because they get together and they, you know, they again are connected, they chat about stuff. It's a lot more difficult for people in that community to isolate themselves if they're involved with the CODs. And that's been a big thing, and it's relevant to other people in rural areas.
And did you find people were willing to open up to you when you sat down to talk to them?
Yes, generally, absolutely. I think that a lot of them had difficulty remembering details. There's one story in the book about a fishing trip that some of the boys went on to Boondoomba Dam, and I actually... I did the rounds, and so that in the book, Meg does the rounds of them as well, trying to find out who was actually there, because they couldn't remember. You know, they'd say, "Oh, I think so-and-so was there," and so on and so forth. Anyway, so it took a while to get to the bottom of the story, and some of the stories are forgotten, and some of them had different interpretations of the same story. One of the things I had said to them in the beginning was, "Well, if there really are no records and you really can't remember, then I'm going to have to make it up." You know, that's the creative license in the book.
I think they call that the classic unreliability of sources. In history and in journalism.
Totally.
Now, Annabelle, if we can talk for a moment about your own process. So you've gone out and gathered these stories, you've met all these characters, and then do you go back and let it stew for a while?
Yes and no. I think there are parts of the story or parts of the book. I actually don't like short stories personally. So when I started, I didn't want it to be just, you know, a collection of short stories either. There needed to be links. Having said that, there were some stories that kind of brewed away, I suppose, in the, you know, the back of my head while I was writing others that were perhaps easier to write. A lot of the football stories, there obviously there's rugby in it. A lot of those stories I built around newspaper reports and memories and so forth. And so there were some things that are very factual in the book that I was able to write, if not fairly easily, at least fairly readily. There were others that took a little chasing up. There is one wonderful book about a missing puppy. In the very first year, having come out of nowhere, these guys, they played C grade under the Roma Echidnas banner, and they were playing in the Darling Downs rugby competition. And in the first year, they actually got into the C grade grand final, which was pretty astonishing, really. They were all partying at the hotel called Spotted Cow in Toowoomba the night after, because the grand final was played at Gold Park. The Gundawindi Emus won, and in the course of partying, one of them actually mislaid the cup. Anyway, there's a long, convoluted story about, you know, where the cup went and how they got the cup back, and it's a very entertaining story. It wasn't actually removed by the Condamine CODs themselves, but ultimately it did end up in their hands, and they had a very, very entertaining way of keeping the Gundawindi Emus informed about where their cup was and how it was ultimately returned to them, courtesy of John Eales, who actually wrote the foreword for the book and has been involved in one of the stories. So that took a while, because I actually had to... There were photographs involved in that story that I had to track down, and I kept ringing people. I'd ring someone and say, you know, do you know this? And they'd say, oh, I don't know, ring so-and-so. So I'd ring so-and-so, and, you know, on and on it went until eventually I tracked everyone down and put the story together.
It sounds like a lot of detective work there.
I guess it was in some ways. It's been the most wonderful experience for me because, again, as a wannabe writer, I was commissioned to write it. I knew that it was going to get published, and I've had at least in part a captive audience. But it was from a technical point of view, it was the most incredible experience, because it's a lot different writing a book to writing, you know, 2,000 to 5,000 words for a magazine or a newspaper. It's a completely different mind bent